This is the track 25 Years, music from a leading contender for the Oscars, the Netflix film The Power of the Dog. Director Jane Campion's Western received 12 Academy Award nominations, including Best Picture. Have you seen it? We're talking about the nominees with the Academy Awards set to take place the end of March in a ceremony that should look more pre-COVID-esque with a full crowd of spectators. What's your favorite film from last year? What one surprised you the most? What film or actor got snubbed? 800-642-1234. Anna Thompson-Hodgick, Senior Lecturer of Film Studies and English at UW-Whitewater. Anna, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Good again. Morning. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, last year we squeezed in your prediction for Best Picture in the final seconds, and I relived that. You had like 2 seconds to say Nomadland like 4 times in a row. But so we'll get to your prediction earlier this time, but I promise. But first, what are your more high level thoughts on the Oscars this year? What are you thinking about?
Well, so this year the Oscars, you know, they, you know, I'm sure the producers are very much wanting, you know, a return to the glory days of, you know, high ratings, you know, where, you know, they can charge advertisers, you know, Super Bowl level prices. And last year, the Oscar telecast was the lowest rated in history. And so there's a lot that's being done in terms of producing the show this year that, you know, they're really trying to get viewers back. And so this is something that is a larger discussion in the industry right now. You know, what is really the relevance of award shows? And are they the best way to really ultimately recognize films that are making a splash or are important films and should be seen, right? But, you know, given everything that's happened in the last 2 years, and that coupled with the streaming revolution that has really hit movie theaters so hard, you know, that this is something that is particularly, you know, really motivating industry discussions right now about, you know, again, do award shows matter if nobody watches them? And you know, certainly they matter, you know, they matter within the industry. Mm-hmm. But do award shows, you know, do they truly drive box office? Do they truly drive viewership of these films? And that's something that I think really was put into stark relief last year when Nomadland, you know, did so well and you had such inclusion and diversity recognized with the director of Nomadland, Chloe Zhao, winning Best Director, the first Asian woman to win Best Director. And yet, you know, again, the wider populace of the you know, audience of movies, you know, weren't really tuning in, you know, and so that is something that is, I think, particularly important for kind of industry executives to recognize in a sense. That being said, you know, we have so much more diversity that has occurred and access to films that we didn't have, right, because of streaming. And a movie like Power of the Dog is a really good example where, you know, the director, Jane Campion, worked with Netflix. And so Netflix is the primary distributor there. That was a film, you know, set in Montana, but filmed all in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And
where the director is from. Yes,
exactly. Yep.
Well, it's interesting too, because you know, New York Times keeping score here and streaming services in the Oscar votes, you know, Netflix, Apple TV, Amazon Films with nearly 40 Oscar nominations, 27 for Netflix alone. So that right there must be telling you something.
Right. And, you know, these streaming services have resources, right? Mm-hmm. Netflix has the resources to bankroll these films and to make sure these films are at least available on their services. And that allows, you know, folks that maybe especially, you know, again, as we, you know, begin to emerge from COVID, you know, if you're not comfortable going to a movie theater, you are able to watch these films in the comfort of your home.
You
right?
can curl up on your couch all you want and eat your microwave popcorn.
Exactly. But also, if you just don't, if you don't want to pay the money to go to a movie theater either, right? So, yeah.
Anna Thompson-Hodgick, Senior Lecturer of Film Studies and English at UW-Whitewater, talking about the Oscars. And with you as well, what was your favorite movie from last year? Should the Academy Awards still be televised? 800-642-1234. You mentioned The Power of the Dog receiving the most award nominations of any movie this year with 12. And its list of nominations include Best Director for Jane Campion.
Rose?
Peter!
Rose, what's the matter? Rose.
Can't Peter go with you today?
Well, he could, but him and Philip kind of paired up.
I don't want that. I don't want him to be with Phil at all.
Well, Rose. He's helping him. He taught him how to ride.
So, a Western here. What are you seeing out of The Power of the Dog?
So this is a film that has some really incredible performances by Benedict Cumberbatch as our sort of chief villain here. It is, you know, it is quite a compelling performance. Kirsten Dunst, you know, she's an industry veteran, has been acting in film since she was a child, kind of burst onto the scene back in the early 90s with Interview with a Vampire. And so she is somebody that has been around a long time, and it's so, you know, it's great to see somebody, an actress like her, you know, into her 40s, you know, turning in a performance that is also very, you know, heart-wrenching in many ways, and so, you know, that all combines with a film that is just from a cinematographer's perspective, it's just a gorgeous film to see. Now the story of the film is, you know, the film kind of is very tightly constructed in its plot, but it moves a bit slowly. And so you really have to pay attention to understand kind of
nuance.
Yeah. There's a lot of nuance with this film, and it's not a film. It's not as I've kind of told other people, that it's not what you think it is. The film is not what you think it is in terms of there's a kind of a big twist at the end. And so Campion spent a lot of time spending time in Montana, really trying to soak in. This is based on a book of the same title, and got to know the author's family, the author of the book. He died in the early 2000s, but she went to Montana. She got to know his family. She really absorbed herself kind of in this whole kind of Montana cattle country. But then for budget purposes decided, it's a lot cheaper for me to film this in New Zealand. So the whole time you're watching, well, at least for me, I was never really fooled that it was Montana. It looks to me like New Zealand the whole time, but it is still a film that is, it's just a really gorgeously shot film.
Which makes me wonder, because what happens to those expansive, you know, cinematically breathtaking productions when we're watching on our laptop, when we're watching on the family TV, or, you know, gasp on the phone?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, I ended up watching this on my computer because I didn't have a chance to get to the theater these last few weeks. And so it certainly does diminish the experience. I'm sure that, I maybe would have been, you know, more sort of, you know, emotionally transported, right, to this landscape if I'd been in a theater, for sure. I don't think it diminished my ability to really key into to take in the story, to really take in the performances of these actors, for sure. So,
talking about the Oscar race, what films stand out to UW-Whitewater film studies scholar Anna Thompson-Hodgick? Have you seen any of these films nominated for Best Picture? Have you stopped following Oscar buzz? How do you decide what movies to watch? Have you been back to the theater over the past year? What did you see? What was it like to be part of an audience? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. Eilish's No Time to Die, a James Bond song, nominated in the Best Original Song category. No Time to Die nominated for 3 Academy Awards. It's Oscar Buzz here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. New York Times wrote about the Oscars' fading prominence as well, with a 76% decline in viewership since 2014. Do you make an event out of watching the Oscars? Does the Academy continue to have a diversity problem? What film deserves a statue? 800-642-1234. Anna Thompson-Hodgick teaches about film at UW-Whitewater with us for the hour. So, Anna, moving on to Dune and director Denis Villeneuve's adaptation of the sci-fi novel Dune, the only other movie this year to receive 10 or more award nominations. We're going to hear.
Getting close, guys. We better abandon ship now.
Where are they?
Okay, so when you adapt a book, Anna, English teacher, what happens?
Right. Well, again, you know, these are films that, you know, this is a much loved novel that, you know, has been adapted a few other times, kind of famously by David Lynch in the 1980s. And, you know, this is a film that, you know, has had a huge following before it ever made it to film. And so this year, 2021, 2022. And so, you know, you have a lot of, you know, maybe a lot of stakeholders, right? When a well-loved novel is again being adapted for the big screen. And so there's just a lot more kind of people to kind of keep happy or impress or maybe tick off when that adaptation doesn't go well. But by all accounts, you know, Dune is a film that I think certainly was, you know, fairly well received. Very, you know, a lot of critics, I think, were just impressed with kind of the visual splendor of this particular adaptation. And, you know, certainly there are themes in Dune and in this version of Dune, too, that sort of speak as well to our sort of our cultural moment. Concerns over climate change, right? Forever, for example, mm-hmm. and scarcity of resources, and so.
What did they say? Water being the new petroleum.
Right. Yeah. And so, I am not shocked that the movie got all these nominations. It was a bit surprising that the director was snubbed, and so that, you know, that doesn't necessarily bode well for its chances to win Best Picture, just because it did not get a director nomination. But I think you could look to this film to win, you know, some of the artistic and technical awards. We'll see.
Lots of sand in there. Lots of expansive sand landscapes is what I saw in the moments that or in the trailers that I was looking at. And certainly lots of detail, though. It comes down to that nuance in this film. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just, you know, again, some pretty strong performances. Timothy Chalamet, I think, is fairly good in his role. And so. You know, this is a film that, you know, my husband, I didn't have the chance, but my husband went and saw it in the theater because he loves the book and had read the book as a young man. And
And it's really... a commitment. This is a novel that's like 900 or so pages.
True. Yes, it is. And in that respect, too, you know, it's kind of, again, one of these epics, right? And, you know, I will say in its favor, you know, the Academy does seem to really love its epic films. You think back to, you know, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, for example,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that is a point in favor of maybe Dune taking the top prize. But if it did happen, it would be, I think, only one of a few, and I can't remember what films, but one of two or one of three films ever that it would take the top prize without the director being nominated. So.
What do you make of that with 10 nominees really stacking it out here? I guess it's been a while since there have been so many nominees in Best Picture category.
Yeah, so I think, you know, this is something that I had kind of mentioned to your producer. In 2012, it was the Academy membership really put in a push to start to begin the process, at least, of diversifying the membership. And it really accelerated after 2015 when it was, you may recall the Oscars So White Twitter hashtag, where it was just real critiques about the same old, you know, white actors getting nominated and not enough individuals of color. And so the 10 nominations, you know, is I think one of the efforts to diversify and to, in order to recognize films from other countries. And so we really do see an international field when we can recognize more films beyond just, say, the five that have been, you know, the standard for so many years. And so we do see that. We see movies like Drive My Car, right?
I was just about to say, Drive My Car might be a good example of that.
And, you know, that's out of Japan. And then you see movies that are nominated across different categories. So another example is the film Flea, which is a film that is nominated both for one of the nominees for Best Animated Film, but also it's Denmark's entry into the best foreign film category. And so we began to see this a couple years ago with Parasite's win, Roma
in 2020.
And Roma the year before that had garnered a lot of nominations. Minari's nomination last year for Best Picture. And so we are starting to see a much more international group of nominees, which I think is, you know, really fascinating. And again, with the streaming, coupled with streaming, these films are much more accessible to American audiences than they would have been 10, 20 years ago, where you maybe would have had to go to an art house movie theater and say only an art house movie theater in a major metropolitan area, where now, you know, you can live in, you know, a small town, rural America. And if you have a decent internet connection, which not all rural Americans have that yet, but you can still access these films that, you know, everyone else is accessing at the same time.
You mentioned their Drive My Car Best Picture nominee and the potential to be the second non-English language film in several years to potentially win Best Picture. But it used to be that subtitles held a movie back. Do you think that that is changing, Anna?
You know, I think so, because, again, you know, people's kind of experience of cinema is changing, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can, again, and easily, if you have a modern television, you're watching a streaming film, you can easily turn on those subtitles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that does, you know, bring up other issues of access in terms of, you know, if you're vision impaired or, you know, it does demand your attention too,
yes.
Right? You have to really like stay engaged and not be on your phone while you're watching a film with subtitles. But I think that, you know, you think too about even on television shows like Squid Game that were really kind of, you know, very popular here in the last few months. We've seen an internationalization not only of our cinema but of our television when we are consuming more and more programming over streaming platforms.
Oh, that's really interesting that those influences that we also are seeing in the area of TV shows that, or, you know, series that we're watching have an impact on what Hollywood is doing.
Oh, yes, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Yeah. And there's, again, there's lots of other sorts of examples of that where, again, a show, it doesn't matter if it's made in Korea or Germany, right? If it's a good story, you know, people are gonna find it, you know, but they'll find it easier if it's got, you know, Netflix behind it to promote it too. So
Anna Thompson Hodgick helping us out with Academy Award picks, what she's noticed in this year's nominees ceremony set for March 27th. Will you be watching? Do you fill out an Oscar ballot with friends? How well do you do against the Academy? Is there a film you want to talk about that was especially moving for you last year? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Anna after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Beyonce, Best Original Song nominee for King Richard, origin story of tennis superstars Venus and Serena Williams. King Richard scoring 6 Oscar nods. We're taking in the awards season on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's the first time in over a decade since the Academy is returning to a solid 10 nominees, as we talked about, for Best Picture. Deadline talking about it's an effort to radically realign the playing field, try to get some more popular movies in the mix. Did you see any of the contenders? Where did you stream them? On your platform du jour or in the multiplex theater with popcorn and soda? Remember those days? 800-642-1234. Film studies scholar Anna Thompson Hodgick helping us out with her picks, observations with us for the hour. What about King Richard? What did you see there in this movie?
So yeah, Will Smith, he gives quite a you know, a good performance in this film. He really,
as a dad to
as
Venus.
A dad, mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's kind of got a, I think it's based on, you know, the Williams father who was from Louisiana, and so Will Smith really has that kind of, almost like kind of Cajun Creole accent down. He's, you know, almost unrecognizable, you know, from, you know, back from his, Fresh Prince days and his, you know, his persona as this kind of, you know, kind of funny, carefree guy, and brings a real intensity to this performance. And so, you know, and this is, this is a very, you know, compelling story, certainly relevant to, you know, these themes relating to kind of, you know, telling a more inclusive story about America's past and here about America's kind of, you know, kind of sports history. How did the Williams sisters become who they are, right? You know, this film makes the case it's all about their father that, you know, really drove this to occur. And, you know, I see Will Smith really as the odds-on favorite here, win this award. This is his third nomination. He had previously was nominated when he played Muhammad Ali in Ali, and then he played the lead role in The Pursuit of Happiness. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, you know, these are all three of these films are biopics, you know, and so Smith has kind of made a name for himself playing, you know, these real life figures. But I think too, you know, it would be fitting for Smith to win this award, being the 5th African American, male to win Best Actor, in the year that, you know, Sidney Poitier has died, and way back when he was sort of just getting started with his career, he acted in a film entitled 6 Degrees of Separation, where he portrayed he was a con man pretending to be Sidney Poitier's son. And so I think it would be quite fitting if Will Smith, you know, won this award. And you can bet that if he does win, he will have something in his acceptance speech, noting or thanking Sidney Poitier, kind of a tribute to him in some way.
Well, let's take a bit of a listen here.
Okay, Mr. Williams, not necessary.
Hold on. You want to check on the kids? Let's check on the kids. We got future doctors and lawyers, plus a couple tennis stars in this house. Now, I understand you got to do your job, even if some crazy neighbor do call talking foolishness. And I don't even mind you saying we hard on these kids. You know why? Because we are. That's our job, to keep them off these streets.
So some real intensity there in his acting of that character. You can really feel it.
Right. Yeah, and the Academy always likes that. They love, the kind of the transformation, right, that an actor undergoes, to kind of minimize their own persona in subservience to the role, right? And I think Smith, pulls this off here pretty well in this film. So,
did I hear you right that you think this will win Best Picture?
No, I don't think I mean, this is really a film that's all about Smith.
Okay.
All about Will Smith,
I got so consumed in that I didn't hear the bigger picture here.
I don't know if I necessarily go so far to say it's like a tour de force, but it is a role that the timing is right for Will Smith. The narrative of the whole, third time's a charm, right? He's been someone, an actor that is one of probably the last, movie stars, right, that people really glom onto. He's got a huge presence as well on social media. Sometimes some critics kind of claim Will Smith is a bit of an oversharer. if you pay attention to the tabloids, maybe he is a little bit, but there's just a lot in the water right now, kind of relating to Will Smith. There's a remake of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air right now.
Yes.
It's kind of, I think I can always be wrong, but I think it's kind of his Oscar to lose in this particular category. So
Anna Thompson-Hodgick telling us what's in the water in the Oscars, Senior Lecturer of Film Studies at UW-Whitewater. You can join in with your Oscar picks, 800-642-1234. Let's move on to Best Leading Actress nominees. None of the Best Leading Actress nominees starred in a Best Picture contender, I think that is. What are you watching here?
So the another kind of narrative that's emerging is that Kristen Stewart is a decent favorite for her performance as Princess Diana in Spencer. Now this is an interesting narrative, however, because she's not won any other awards, and generally you can get a sense of what the field is looking like if they've won a Critics' Choice Award, and she's
Golden
not
Golden Globe or something like that.
Right. And she has not nominated for a SAG Award. Those SAG Awards are going to be this weekend. And so that's going to be kind of a good indicator, I think, in two. But her performance is really riveting. I've heard Spencer described as kind of this fable, right? It's not necessarily a conventional biopic, but it is, she, in terms of the cadence of Diana's speech, she's really mastered that in this performance. She really looks like, Diana in terms of hair and the makeup. But the question is, Kristen Stewart's most well known for the Twilight series, five films that she made, right?
Mm-hmm.
So can she effectively shed that image, right, of Bella from Twilight in order to really be taken more seriously as an actress? Olivia Colman.
The Last Daughter.
Yeah. So The Last Daughter is a film that's not necessarily a fun film to watch, but it is. Coleman again turns out a tremendous performance in this film, and she's already won. She won for The Favorite a few years ago in her portrayal of Queen Anne in The Favorite. This is a very different movie from from The Favorite. And yet Coleman, you know, she does bring such a presence and, you know, just a masterclass in acting. And so the question is, will Academy voters want to reward her so soon after The Favorite?
Directed by Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, yeah. And so this makes this film one of the only films that Maggie Gyllenhaal is nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. And she's mm-hmm. the only woman in that category nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay. The film can be disconcerting at times. It's not about a topic that's that we really like to think about, which is kind of a mother who didn't really want to be a mother ultimately, and kind of it's a story of kind of estrangement and told much through flashback. But the acting is really stellar in this film, and it does leave you with lots to think about after you've seen The Lost Daughter. Another film too available through Netflix. So again, another film that's, you know, if you have a Netflix subscription, it's an easily accessible film for sure. So,
What movies or actresses do you think were snubbed this year? Didn't get an Oscar nod.
So there was a lot of campaigning going on for Lady Gaga in the House of Gucci.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, another biopic. I kind of want to call this the sort of the year of the biopic. But you know, that was a film with a big budget. Ridley Scott was the director of House of Gucci, and so it was kind of a shock that she was snubbed. You know, she's nominated for a SAG award this next week, and she could very well win it, but she did not make it into that Oscar nomination pool. So that was a big one. The other one, you know, a lot of critics were really discussing how wonderful the film Passing was, and particularly the performance of Ruth Negga. Passing was the adaptation of a 1920s Harlem Renaissance novel by Nella Larsen of the same name. And Ruth Negga portrays a young woman who is African-American, but light-skinned, very light-skinned, and so decides to pass as white in a very highly segregated society of the time. And again, critics were kind of falling all over themselves with her performance, and so the fact that she was snubbed was kind of noted. And then the other snub that's kind of interesting, it might portend the fact that the other was the snub of Tony Kushner, who adapted West Side Story.
West Side Story. Right? I was going to ask you about that. What's going on there?
Right. So, you know, I think there was a sense that, you know, critics again loved West Side Story by and large when it was released a couple months ago, and loved that adaptation. But there was also another narrative emerging, particularly of critics of color, cultural critics of color, which noted that, you know, why did this movie have to get remade, right? And when there are so many stories that have yet to be told or have yet to be even written, right, about kind of the plight of people of color, and you know, the Puerto Rican in particular, and the fact too that, you know, this is a story about that, you know, was originally made in the 1950s, you know, made the film, comes out in the early 60s, and, you know, made with, you know, by white people in the 50s and 60s, and Kushner too, right, is white, was white. And so I think that there may have been some backlash there, the film, you know, really comes out strong, came out to strong reviews, but a very kind of sustained backlash against Spielberg's version of West Side Story really
could be written between the lines there. Yes.
Right, right. And I think that explains Kushner's snub ultimately.
Anna Thompson Hodgick, senior lecturer, UW-Whitewater, teaching courses on film. Who will win Best Actor or Actress in a Leading Role? Will Power of the Dog sweep the actors? How about the animated feature category? Let's please talk about Encanto. Still time for you. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network.
hay que partir y construir su propio futuro. Hay oruguitas, no se aguanten más. Hay oruguitas, no se aguanten más. Hay que crecer, partir y volver. Hacia adelante seguirás. Vienen milagros, vienen crisálidas. Hay que partir y construir su propio futuro. Hay oruguitas.
Best original song nominee, Dos Oruguitas, emotional ballad at the climax of the Disney animated film Encanto. Talking Oscar season on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, should the song win? That could score Lin-Manuel Miranda the coveted EGOT, the Emmy, the Grammy, the Oscar, Tony. What do you think of Encanto? What is your favorite Oscar category? Maybe it's documentary. Maybe it's sound, like me. Category like makeup or hairstyling. Still time, 800-642-1234. Film scholar Anna Thompson-Hodgick with us for 10 more minutes. Anna, Encanto, go. I mean, the soundtrack, it booms out of our house and our smart speakers. Like, my kids will not stop. There is no end of Bruno in sight.
right. Yeah, my daughter too. I mean, she fell in love with the soundtrack before she ever saw the film.
Yes.
I think that Encanto is pretty much a lock for best song, and I think it, you know, it is just a, well, at least from a popular perspective. And you know, this is, you know, Encanto, I anticipate will win Best Animated Feature as well. It's just kind of got that kind of the Disney juggernaut behind it as well. And it's a good film. You know, it's just ultimately a good film. But you know, this is one other thing. You know, I was just reading some changes the Oscars producers are making for next month's ceremony. And for the first time, they are going to have an award that's kind of a People's Choice Award.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and so it'll be interesting to see if, you know, it will Encanto win that, because I do think that it does kind of have kind of the popular sentiment behind it in many ways. And the soundtrack is pretty great. You know, it's just a fun, kind of peppy, upbeat, soundtrack overall. And so I think that he may very well get if he got.
Well, we will see. And you know, it's interesting too, how you say the Oscars are looking for input, right? They're this People's Choice type of award. And I'm wondering if that would have happened if the Oscars hadn't been losing significant audience in recent years.
Yeah, no, I really don't think so. I think this is an effort, right, to kind of try increasingly to meet audiences where they are, and that hasn't really been happening for the last, you know, 5 years or so. And so there's also some major changes that a lot of the some of the awards that we are accustomed to seeing, like sound editing and sound and makeup and costume, these categories are actually going to be taken out of the live telecast for the first time, and they're going to be taped segments and put into the show later, so that you'll still kind of see who wins these awards, but they're not going to have the winners are not going to have their sort of live moment in the sun. And the Oscars tried to do this a few years ago, and there was incredible backlash against it. Documentary short subject, animated film short subject, those categories as well are going to be taken out and kind of edited back in. And so, you know, that's unfortunate in a way too, because those filmmakers that are making those shorter films, you know, they oftentimes are those, if they win in particular, they can use that as a kind of a launching pad, right?
Indeed, right. And they have that moment behind the mic that can, I mean, there have been political statements. There have been so many words said there that have a greater impact.
Right. And the producers, I think they want to, you know, this is their effort, right, to try to bring viewers back. We want to allow all the songs to be performed, for example, a little more emphasis on the glitz and glamour and the in memoriam, you know, moments that viewers ultimately do really like. It's industry that is, I think, pushing, you know, would want to push back against these changes. But at the end of the day, you know, this telecast was reliant on advertisers, right? Mm-hmm. And being able to charge top dollar for ads, and they can't make that justification if viewership continues to decline. So,
it'll be interesting to kind of get a sense as they repackage those lesser categories. Will I notice as a viewer? And I mean, now that I'm watching out for those types of things, of course I'll notice, but it really does want, you know, leave you wondering what was left on the editing floor, so to speak.
Right.
Well, I think we've left a little bit more time this time for your predictions and specifically in Best Picture. What do you think?
Well, the next two couple weeks are going to be really revealing. So this weekend you have the SAG Awards, and then the weekend after you have the BAFTAs. And so The Power of the Dog is not nominated for Best Ensemble Cast for the SAG Award, which is kind of might be something to think about. But I still think The Power of the Dog will probably take home the top award. And if it doesn't, look to Jane Campion for sure to take the Best Directing Award. And I think if Power of the Dog does not take Best Picture, that Dune may come in there and get that top award. So it's hard.
Best cinematography could win the day is what I'm hearing.
Right, for sure. Yeah.
Well, and Campion, you know, became the first woman in the 94-year history of the awards to receive two directing nominations. So, you know, there's a little something there on the road to gender parity in filmmaking, I suppose.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And I think it's kind of sad it's taken this long, right, for a woman to garner two nominations. But because of the internationalization, too, of the Academy membership, you know, she is Australian, New Zealander, I can't remember, but she, you know, that I think would appeal to that wider membership. And so you're in that sense, too, you're not necessarily going to see Spielberg or Paul Thomas Anderson, kind of the two, you know, white male establishment directors, maybe take home the top prize. And so I really think, again, Campion is going to do it. Can always, you know, Spielberg could edge in there perhaps, but I think but Power of the Dog too has just had a little bit more of a more recent push in terms of its popularity with critics, at least. So yeah.
Well, you know, Ada, you know, we have this on tape, and next time around, this might be the piece of tape that we pull.
Right.
You saying this. Well, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you. Yep, wonderful time. Thanks.
Anna Thompson-Hodgick, Senior Lecturer of Film Studies in English at UW-Whitewater. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. No se aguante más, hay que crecer, aparte y volver, hacia adelante seguirás, vienen milagros, vienen crisálidas, hay que partir y construir su propio futuro.